I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Today, we are broadcasting from WRNI in Providence, Rhode Island, where the Freedom Festival is underway. It's a series of programs sponsored by the Rhode Island Council for the Humanities, marking the 200th anniversary of the official end of the transatlantic slave trade. Yesterday, I was invited to host a panel discussion examining this crucial moment in world and American history. We talked about the impact of slavery on the formation of this country and how that legacy endures. The panelists were Katrina Brown, the writer, director, and producer of Traces of the Trade. It's a documentary about her family's involvement in the slave trade. James Campbell, a professor of history at Stanford University, who formerly taught at Brown University and did extensive work examining Brown's connection to the slave trade. Mary Kim Arnold, executive director of the Rhode Island Council for the Humanities, and the Reverend Jeffrey Williams. He's senior pastor of the Cathedral of Life Christian Assembly in Providence, Rhode Island. We gathered at the Providence Black Repertory Company. I started off by asking Reverend Williams why slavery remains an important topic for discussion.
Well, particularly here in New England, having learned more about the history of the slave trade as it relates to Rhode Island, we need to learn how to connect some of the dots. And if we don't know our history, we're destined, A, to repeat it, but more importantly, we'll live in a context right now where we won't realize what has actually made us who we really are. That's not just for people of African descent, but that's for all of us. We are a byproduct of a mosaic experience that has all led us to this place here today.
How did you come to this insight? Because there are those who would say, let the scars heal, let sleeping dogs lie.
Well, you really can't heal from something unless you really know what was the cause of the injury in the first place. And to look at the wounds that are within people, particularly within the African American community, requires some examination, that these are not self-inflicted wounds, that something happened somewhere.
Mary Kim, why talk about slavery now?
Well, I think especially here in Rhode Island, in addition to Rhode Island's own history, when you look at the population of the state, I think African Americans are about 9% of the overall population of Rhode Island, but most of that is concentrated in the urban areas, and we still today see tremendous and significant disparities in all areas of social, political, economic life. So the idea that the past is the past is sort of absurd and not really true. We see it every day.
Why was it important enough to have a public conversation about slavery?
Well, I think part of what we try to do at the Council for the Humanities is invite a broader conversation about issues that are significant to our daily lives. You know, this notion started with the commemoration of the abolition of the anniversary of the abolition of the slave trade, but we very quickly recognized that any efforts that we did, any activities that we put together to commemorate it would have to look really broadly and inclusively at African Americans today in Rhode Island. And it doesn't seem right or appropriate or good or healthy to have that conversation limited in a small way. In fact, there's no way to understand, I think, anything about these issues unless folks whose lives are impacted by them directly have an opportunity to share their stories.
Katrina Brown, so often, as I think people know, January was the official end of the transatlantic slave trade 200 years ago. And we did a month of programs around this important historical event. And I can tell you that some of the response we got from the public was quite appreciative, and some was just as, I didn't own any slaves, my family didn't own any slaves, this has nothing to do with me. Now, you're in the unique position of a person who discovered your family did indeed not only own slaves, but trafficked in the bodies of African people. And you not only came to grips with that history, you decided to explore that history in a very public way. So I'd like to ask you first, if you would, as briefly as you can, tell us how you found out, and then why you decided to make a film about it.
Sure. My grandmother gets the credit for doing that, which grandmothers can do best, which is kindle something that can really grow. And it was a couple sentences in a booklet about our family history in which she mentioned our slave trading ancestors, and she could have swept it under the rug as had been done for a number of generations, but she started me on this journey to research more and learn more, because the shock for me was first finding it out as I read her booklet and then realizing moments later that I already knew and had completely buried it. you know, presumably the human psyche doesn't, you know, one doesn't want to have to face the horror of it if one's ancestors were perpetrators. And so there are all these kind of mechanisms that I think we probably evolved over the years to distance ourselves.
I want to ask you more about that in a minute, but I want to bring Dr. Campbell into the conversation. I want to mention that Dr. Campbell's most recent book is Middle Passages, African-American Journeys to Africa, 1787 to 2005. It was a finalist for the 2007 Pulitzer Prize in History. How did you become engaged with slavery? Why is this your topic?
You know, I grew up in a small town in Illinois, in the countryside, actually the same county that Ronald Reagan grew up in. There were no black people in my town, none in my county. I remember the first time I saw a black person, actually.
It's not today, is it?
No, not today.
Because that's a lot of responsibility.
And, you know, and so, you know, a lot of people, you know, sort of wonder why a white person would get interested in writing this particular history. But, I mean, the transatlantic slave trade is the engine of the Atlantic world economy for centuries. It goes on for 3.5 centuries. The entire modern world grows out of this history. This isn't a kind of peripheral story. This isn't, you know, the blue shaded page of the textbook. This really is the fundamental story of American history. So I guess, you know, my answer would be I do write about my own history. I'm an American.
You and Katrina both have made interesting points about what we don't know and what we don't want to know. I'm going to go back to Katrina for what we don't want to know, but I'd like you to tell us a little bit more about what we don't know.
Well, you know, if you had taken an American history course right up until literally the early 1960s, what you would have read there was that slavery was a benign institution, that Reconstruction had been this sort of harebrained attempt to give political rights to an obviously ill-equipped group of people, and that the system of Jim Crow that existed in the South was a return to political sanity. And the distortion gets magnified further when you start talking about the history of the North, which, you know, insofar as Northerners own any history that has anything to do with slavery, here in New England in particular, we tell a story of our ancestors as being these heroic abolitionists who marched south to free the slaves. We don't talk about slavery existing in all 13 colonies and states. Rhode Island was a slave society, has been a slave society for longer than it's been a free society to this day. And we certainly don't talk about Rhode Islanders sending about 2/3 of the North American ships that carried slaves to the New World, about 1,000 ships in all.
And some of those ships belong to your family, the
right.
DeWolfs.
The DeWolfs, yeah.
When you embarked on this idea and you decided that you were going to make a film about this, you did, I think, what was kind of an unusual and courageous thing, which you invited family members to join you on that journey. What happened?
I sent a letter to 200 relatives that my great uncle had kept track of a lot of people. So I wrote to people, and 9 ended up coming on the journey with me. We went, you know, we started in Rhode Island and went to Ghana to visit the slave forts, and then to Cuba, where the DeWolfs owned plantations. And, you know, the fundamental premise was that to go to the actual places means facing things and absorbing and, you know, really confronting everything that it brings up to be in those places, and that it's just not the same if you stay home. And that proved true. I mean, certainly it felt like it would be a way to have us as white folks just noticing what comes up around guilt, defensiveness, fear, shame, embarrassment, you know, all that stuff, and to see if we could get to the other side of it.
Do you think you did?
Yeah. I just this past Saturday I heard someone say, you know, to make gold, you have to go through the refiner's fire. And I won't claim gold, but I will claim that I feel way more grounded and almost more sane as a human being now that I'm facing the truth, as painful as it is. So, yes.
If you're just joining us, I'm Michelle Martin, and you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We are broadcasting from Providence, Rhode Island, where we are participating in the 2008 Freedom Festival, observing the bicentennial of the end of the transatlantic slave trade. Reverend Williams, it's my observation that white people aren't the only people who don't want to talk about slavery. Mm. Is that yours as well?
Yes, it's painful, and it reminds everyone of a part of history that we wish never happened. And what we've learned in history about slavery somehow projects on particularly people of color that somehow we were part of it. Somehow we were at fault somewhere in there. So why talk about something that's so painful? And so we just simply avoid it. Secondly, is an apology forthcoming? And so if you don't feel you're going to get any resolution, you just kind of stuff the emotion and just keep moving on. And that becomes very part of the insanity that folks feel. And if you go further to talk about reparations or somehow making things right as much as you possibly can, there are people of all hues who argue that point, fearing that it's taking us backwards and we need to go forward. We really can't go forward when we're tethered to the history.
Dr. Campbell, you want to speak to that also? It's an interesting question. We never had that kind of a process.
No, I think you're right. I mean, you know, we live in an era today where a whole variety of vehicles for what you might call transitional justice now exist, from war crimes tribunals to truth and reconciliation commissions, institutional national apologies, and so forth. You look around the world and you see these happening over the last 20 or 30 years. I mean, there's been over 24 national truth and reconciliation commissions. I mean, a couple of things. I mean, I'm going to suggest that it's both not too late and too late. In terms of unearthing the truth of this history, I mean, look, I'm a historian. It's an occupational hazard. I have to believe that it's better that we know this, that we face this, that we have an accurate or more accurate understanding of where we came from. On the other hand, the specific mechanism of a truth commission is one of the vital components of that is about testimony. It's an opportunity for people who experienced grievous injuries to have an opportunity to publicly describe what was done to them and have those injuries acknowledged. And in that sense, in terms of slavery, we're no longer in a position to have that.
Go ahead, Katrina.
I was just going to challenge a little bit, Jim, what you were saying about that there aren't the people today, and obviously there aren't, and who could participate in a commission or a truth and reconciliation process. But, you know, I'm always struck by the degree to which Black Americans can speak as if it was just yesterday, can feel that connection so profoundly in their lives, and could testify in a way that was very much about the past and how its pain lingers.
With that, I'm going to ask from each of you is, what would you like us to do?
I do think we need a truth repair and reconciliation process so that we can connect the past to the present and understand the really concrete and tangible problems and challenges. So that doesn't mean government programs solve all the problems on the one hand. We also need to look at within ourselves, all of us. But I think a national truth repair and reconciliation process would go a long way.
Katrina Brown is the producer, director, and writer of Traces of the Trade. It's available on DVD now, and there's a wonderful website where you can find out more about her book. Katrina Brown, thank you so much for joining us. Reverend Williams?
I think this is a great beginning, at least within the Rhode Island context. And I think more sessions in which we actually really look at it. Most of us are still seeing or hearing about slavery from what we learned growing up or some snippets here and there. But to really look at it, I think, would be important. If we're going to heal some of the social ills, it takes a proper diagnosis of the problem and the depth of the problem. And until we're willing to look at it for what it really is, things won't be better for our generations to come.
Reverend Jeffrey Allen Williams is the senior pastor of Cathedral of Life Christian Assembly here in Providence, Rhode Island. Reverend Williams, thank you so much for joining us. Mary Kim?
I just want to share a very maybe mundane and white-collar example of what contemporary manifestations are. I was part of a minority manager seminar, and one of the speakers that came to talk to us was a headhunter at a major headhunting agency in advancement for advancement professionals. And he told us what nobody wanted to hear, but he told us that we will get calls by headhunters at a disproportionate rate from our colleagues, and we will get put into more search pools than our colleagues, and some of us may actually get to write our tickets to other places and move very quickly up the ladder because people need to have diverse pools of candidates. But what this will mean at a certain point in your career is that you've actually outpriced yourself to many of the highest level jobs, and you're resume will most likely reflect a really rapid ascent, and you will not have had the opportunity to really grow in a depth of knowledge at any particular point that really is required of the most senior level managers. So we'll be in a lot of pools, but we won't be landing those really important jobs. And my closing thought
now
is that
they tell me.
That these are not, you know, these big dramatic things that, of course, are still, you know, the institutional things that are still there, but there are also these other things that affect us every day as people of color. And I guess my hope for what we do is just, you know, every day get closer and closer to telling a truth about our own lives.
Mary Kim Arnold is the Executive Director of the Rhode Island Council for the Humanities. Mary Kim, thank you so much for joining us. Dr. Campbell, you want to speak to that also?
I think we study the past for the same reason that we travel. We want to encounter human beings whose universe of moral possibility is similar to ours, overlaps with ours, and yet is different. And in the process of doing that, we come back to our own society or our own time, and we learn to see it with fresh eyes. So what I hope will come about out of this, you know, if I thought these kinds of historical investigations just led to an endless rehashing of past injuries, I'd chuck it. But, you know, what I really hope is that out of these kinds of processes, the work that Katrina's done, the work that's being done in the Freedom Festival here, the work that was done at Brown University, we can help people look around their world and see it in different ways and begin to understand that the way things look now aren't the way that they have to look, you know, and that we don't have to live in a society in which a black man is 8 times more likely to be incarcerated than a white man. And that in a variety of ways that exploring the past can alter the matrix of political possibility in the present.
James Campbell is professor of history at Stanford University. His latest book is Middle Passages, African American Journeys to Africa, 1787 to 2005. It was published by Penguin Press. Our thanks to all of you. Our thanks to the Providence Black Repertory Company and to WRNI. And thank you all so much for joining us. Needless to say, our conversation went on much longer than what we were able to bring you here. To listen to the full discussion, you can go to our website at the Tell Me More page at npr.org.